We take the health and well-being of all our listeners seriously. Awareness and understanding of mental health is important, and we urge caution when you listen to this podcast. If you find yourself being negatively affected or experiencing strong emotions, we want you to know that there are support services available and that you are not alone. If you believe that you or someone you care about may be at imminent risk to harm oneself or others, we urge you to dial 911. Additional resources include the National Suicide Helpline at 1-800-273-8255 or the National Suicide Text Line. Just text HOME to 741-741. If you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, help is available. Call or text 988 or visit 988lifeline.org.
Good day and welcome back to The Ripples, a podcast from The Wellness Home. A podcast about personal wellness and growth in the context of academic medicine and the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine. Because what you do for yourself not only helps enrich your life, but it creates powerful ripples into the lives of others. I am your host, Dr. Veena Prasad, and joining with me today is our co-host, Dr. John Courand. We are members of your GME wellness team.
Thank you, Veena. So we have an important and timely topic of discussion for this podcast. Important because we lose an average of one physician per day to suicide, or almost 400 per year. This topic is also timely as suicide rates for incoming residents are at their highest during the months of August through October of their intern year, the time we're in right now. Joining us for this critical episode is Dr. Woodson Scott Jones. He is a professor of pediatrics and the vice dean for graduate medical education and the designated institutional official for UT Health San Antonio. In this role, he oversees the accreditation and administration of over 85 general and subspecialty programs and training over 860 residents and fellows at the University of Texas Health in San Antonio. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jones.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Jones, prior to joining the UT Health Science Center, you served in several graduate medical education roles within the military. Can you tell us about these roles and their responsibilities?
Sure. I've, again, been very fortunate to have multiple different roles in education and, frankly, out of education, as you noted, in my time in the military. I was a clerkship director heading up the pediatric training programs for the military across all three services and spread across the country. I was a program director in pediatrics. I was the director of medical education for Wolford Hall. It was a hospital at that time period. And then after I retired, became the dean of SAWSHAC. And that is the institution that provides what I do now, but it's the oversight for the Army and the Air Force graduate medical and allied health training programs here in town. So various roles, lots of fun.
Absolutely. And I will say that I remember that at one point, Dr. Jones and I were both pediatric program directors at the same time. So that was really great.
We were mental health providers for each other. Seriously. As well, as we would meet for lunch often to discuss challenges.
Absolutely.
Interesting times, I'm sure there were. So good to have you, Dr. Jones, here. Whether as program director or DIO, all of us serving in these positions worry about the mental health of our trainees. Can you tell us the various programs and resources you put into place during your time as DIO to support residents in this regard?
Sure. Well, I'll actually kind of back up and we'll frame this kind of contextually over time. What I would say in the military in the late 2000s, and certainly even before the late 2000s, there were substantive issues and concerns over suicide and mental health issues of our physicians, and frankly, even more so, our troops coming back from the battlefield. And there were a lot of robust interventions. And of course, as we watched those interventions, we began to ask ourselves, we need to be attuned to those, to our trainees, and some of them having already been downrange and been deployed, we also wanted to be attuned for their sake as well. And we had a great working relationship with our behavioral health services. And we knew that they were readily available to us, and we routinely capitalized on using them when we had a resident that we knew was in crisis or was challenged with their performance. And we were making really strong efforts of handoffs to those health counselors at the time. In fact, we called them our behavioral health specialist to the stars.
Oh, that's
and
great.
That was a name we gave to them because, again, they knew our residents, they understood their needs, and they were readily available. Anytime we called, they would work them in. And that was a real blessing for us, and we recognized that at the time.
So despite all the preparations you had put into place, unfortunately, it was not enough to prevent one resident's death by suicide. How difficult was it for you to hear of the loss of this resident, knowing all the support and counseling this resident had received during their training?
Well, as I noted earlier, we had a very robust system of addressing and working with residents that we were aware were having challenges. And indeed, we did have one that was going through some life challenges, rethinking their course, what did they want to do? And we knew the individual was suffering from major depression. They were in their intern year. They were rethinking their life choices, i.e. I chose the wrong specialty. We knew they were at risk for major depression. We had plugged them into our STAR. You know, our STAR therapist was taking care of them. And despite all of this, and including bringing around friends, talking to the program director, and actually mid-year, and this is a challenge in the military, allowed them to change specialty.
Wow.
All because we were trying to work to find a supportive way to invest in and enroll in this individual. And yet we still lost this resident to death by suicide. Of course, he had the friend groups. He had everyone around him that was supporting him, and we still lost him. And I could tell you it was difficult. It was, we were stunned. I don't know that I could describe it any better. Our GME team was stunned. Our counselors were stunned. Program director and friends and peers.
Yeah, I know the counselor that worked with him quite closely was incredibly upset with the with this happening.
Yeah.
Yes, listening to what you say, Dr. Jones, is still shocking and it is sad. These events are such a great shock to the program as well. What was the initial response of program leadership to this tragic event? Were there opportunities for improvement in their approach?
Sure. Well, obviously, we were very contemplative and did a thorough review of our care. And, of course, we went through the would've, should've, and the could've moments mm-hmm. of what could have been done differently. And yet, I think I was helped a lot by a very seasoned mental health provider who also challenged me personally helped me through this mm-hmm. by, you know, asking me, do I really believe that mental health is a disease? And if it is a disease, you'd lose some patients despite your best efforts. And so then the question really turned from moping and thinking about myself and what I could have done better, as I would hope we would all as healthcare providers to say, okay, what can we do moving forward to do better than we've done in the past? And from there, we recognized, too, that we had only been working at the tip of the iceberg. We had been, and we're patting ourselves on the back for our ability to take residents that we knew that were near crisis or in crisis and in getting them services to say, but is that enough? Mm-hmm. Do we need to dive deeper? And so what I would say is that one of the things we began to do is we launched multiple efforts. And I do have to stop and give credit to Dr. Donna Schwab, who was our PhD counselor, and Dr. Stephen Harrison, our associate dean for GMEs, for so much of these initiatives. Because mm-hmm. as you guys know, it's not all about one individual. It's about a team of individuals.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And so Dr. Schwab created our harbor, and as she labeled it, is the safe space. And that was diving below the water to treat and engage before crisis. And harbor stands for Harnessing Adaptive Resident Behavior for Occupational Resilience. So we again began to say, how can we build on resilience? How can we work with our residents going deeper down in the water to work with them before they get to crisis? And we started proactively screening using the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Interactive Screening Program, and then using that to link and to link up our residents to the harbor. We started a physician wellness subcommittee led by one of our anesthesia program directors, Dr. Chris Nagy. And he led that group that put together a wonderful, comprehensive, and institutional approach with wellness champions, with a number of other initiatives for addressing well-being amongst our trainees.
Wow, sounds like you have implemented so many things. Harbor sounds like such a wonderful program, and it's a really a place where people find their safe space. In the immediate aftermath of this tragedy, Dr. Jones, what were the affects to program faculty and trainees within and outside of the program?
Well, I think I alluded to the impact on the program director and the faculty. And like our office and leadership, it was probably hardest on the peers. His peer friends, his peer residents. It took a lot of meetings and a lot of time with ourselves and small groups and working through those emotions and those challenges with him.
I know in talking with Dr. Schwab after this had occurred, she mentioned the fact that for several days it was almost continually residents coming in and talking with her and the other counselors in order to deal with some of the emotions that they were feeling at the time.
Indeed.
So, you know, Scott, one of the positive outcomes to this event was the creation of a video and interactive program entitled Time to Talk About It. Can you talk a little bit about the motivation to create this program?
Well, as we've already noted, Dr. Schwab was certainly a primary driver here. She had been frustrated with her observation about how reluctant physicians were and willing to seek help. The old adage, physician heal thyself, seemed to pretty much be a part of the mantra that is within our profession around mental health. Mm-hmm. And if we were going to focus on prevention and we were going to dive below the water, we had to address this reluctance to seek help, talk about mental health concerns or needs, and engage with our friends and peers and colleagues who were struggling. Well, Donna gathered friends of the resident who had died by suicide, and they were eager to talk about this. She also had a fellow who was brave and I would say courageous to talk about how he almost took his own life by suicide, and that it was a faculty member mm-hmm. who had lost his little brother. Oh. To suicide, also a physician, who saw that he was struggling and took the time to say, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. What's going on? How can I help you?
That's so important.
Oh, it's so important. And they shared their stories of what and what signs to look for in a resident that's struggling with depression, who may be at risk for suicide. And we did this during orientation, an interactive session, where everyone was sharing. I will tell you, by the end, there was not a dry eye in that auditorium. Yes. Well, these were real stories, real people, and real events that were very real to everybody in our organization. What came out of that was it was so powerful, we knew that we needed to take this to the rest of our trainees, and that was the nidus for the video, Time to Talk About It.
I know this was ultimately published in the literature and shared with the ACGME, the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education. Can you talk a little bit about the legacy of this program?
Well, after making the video, we began setting up meetings with our programs to watch, and we watched these in small groups to discuss. The content was so challenging and troubling as we saw a trigger, a motive trigger for so many individuals. We thought it was very important to train the facilitators and optimally have a behavioral health counselor there and available, and if not, readily available, if needed, from watching the video and the discussion that ensued. Because as I noted before, these are real people, not actors, telling real stories. And we created facilitators, guides, handouts, Harbor resources, and the evaluations were overwhelmingly positive. And now we had the faculty begin saying, how about us? Mm-hmm. Please let us attend. And we began to think about how to encourage and bring them alongside. It was ultimately published in a peer-reviewed MedEd portal, and within 2 years had close to 1,000 downloads.
Wow.
As an educational resource. And I would say Soshek and UT began to partner during this time as well, and both were invited to be part of the well-being discussions very early on with the ACGME. We provided some national workshops around our well-being efforts at both institutions, including those on how to respond after a death by suicide. Including great partners at Duke and at New York Presbyterian. And it really is a team, and it's part of a team effort with us at Soshek. And now I'm here in this wellness program here at UT. It's amazing. And the amazing community response and approach that we have during the pandemic mm-hmm. has been recognized. And I I take a lot of that back to the building of that community, to the building of those partnerships. John mentioned our partnership that goes back when we were both program directors, and then building those resources where we could work together and develop a program that could be highlighted by the ACGME as what does a proper response for an institution well-being approach look like in a pandemic. So, you know, I would say it's pretty amazing when you look back now. It always makes me sad that a resident death by suicide would begin the nidus of the stimulus to move towards such an effort. But we have room to grow. You know, regarding the stigma and physician heal thyself, we're not done yet. Vina, you clearly know that, yes, what we still challenge with.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we're still looking for opportunities to improve. And I would invite our listeners to consider sharing the Time to Talk About It physician depression and suicide video and discussion sessions at their institution and with one another. Again, the key aspects will be download all the materials, have the right resources there with you if you're going to use it, because it's a powerful tool to begin this discussion if it hasn't already started at your own institution.
And one exciting thing is I can say that we've certainly had the opportunity to use this video and the accompanying materials here with our internal medicine residents on multiple occasions. It's been extremely well received. And also I'm excited to know that we're doing a program later in September with our partners at the University of the Incarnate Word, where this video and the resources will be highlighted in an event there.
Definitely. We are going to be actually using these resources again in the coming month with internal medicine and a few other departments. So this is very well received. We do hear from residents after them watching this video. It's a very powerful video.
Well, thanks for listening and accompanying us today, Scott. You know, we've really enjoyed spending time with you and hearing about the amazing program that you and your team at Shawshek helped develop. And for our listeners, remember that just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into the water, the actions of individuals and teams can have far-reaching events.
Based upon this whole experience, can you leave a pebble for those faculty who dedicate their lives to resident education, as well as those residents who embrace the role serving as their brother and sister's keepers, Dr. Scott?
Indeed. I think you've touched upon the key thing there. Being our brothers and sisters keepers. You know, we are responsible to be there for one another, to support one another. And frankly, even last time I was on inpatient service, when I see a resident that's just not quite looking themselves, to take the time to say, are you okay?
Yes.
And mean it and look them in the eye. And it's not that passing question. It's a I really care question.
Absolutely. That's so important.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Well, thank you again so much. And for our listeners, do not forget to subscribe to our podcast and check back at the beginning of every month for our newest episode.
Thank you so much for your time and your sharing your wisdom with us, Dr. Jones. And thank you all for listening. Now go create some ripples.